This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Resolute Square.
Welcome to The Zero Line, produced by Resolute Square. I'm Sergeant Sarah Ashton Cirillo of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, and every week we'll be bringing you inside Ukraine's war for liberty and liberation against the Russian enemy, while explaining how a victory by us on the battlefield isn't just vital for the Ukrainian people, but for the world as a whole. We will push back against the lies regarding this war for freedom and take you straight to the front lines of the fight for democracy.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Zero Line from Resolute Square. I'm Lisa Senecal, executive editor at Resolute Square, and I am here with Sarah Ashton Cirillo, who is, as of late and regularly, joining us from Ukraine. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Lisa. It's great to be here. You mentioned the term late. We're recording this. It's going to come out tomorrow, but we're recording this at 11 p.m. local time. And while Ukraine is not in the headlines the way it should be, that doesn't mean that our days aren't packed trying to make certain that our victory against Russia is assured. And more importantly, that the global community understands that with the help of the United States, United Kingdom, and all of our partners, we will be able to push back against the creeping tyranny and fascism that we are at the front lines of and that the world is having to experience through the dictatorship of Putin. We have the Ayatollah who's, you know, sending drones in, trying to kill us on a daily basis through his Russian partners, and so on and so forth with all of these tyrants who, once they would try to get through Ukraine, make no mistake, and this is why the Resolute Square audience is so important, because they get it. They're coming for everybody else.
Yeah, I hope we are like drilling that in to the degree that it needs to be said, and that people listening and watching this podcast amplify it and really talk to anybody you can get to listen to you about this, because it is existential. This is where we are at this point. Ukraine must be, and I believe will be, victorious over Putin. We're going to talk about a few different things on today's podcast, but you and I talk pretty often about transparency and truth and the value of living in reality and not a complete misinformation bubble. So we have been getting more information coming out of Ukraine from President Zelensky. And can you talk about what the loosening up of some of this information during wartime still is? Why is it happening?
Well, we are under martial law, and it's important for people to realize that Ukraine under martial law really isn't what we would understand martial law to be. There's still press freedoms here. There's still the ability to move around. We've had a curfew across the country at varying hours. There's some rules on, obviously, where you can go due to operational security. However, one of the criticisms, and one that I believe had some merit to it, is that there was a lack of transparency, even on issues that should have been very clear, right? That we could have answered. And with the change in the military leadership, now that Commander-in-Chief Sirski is in charge and doing a full review of the situation on the front lines, he himself was at the front just this week to make sure what was taking place. I believe that the president also understands that it has to be time for a new style coming out of the administration. And part of that is to answer questions more clearly, more precisely, and with fact-based answers, instead of leaving lingering doubt as to what the reality is. And one of these areas that, as you brought up, what's happening transparency-wise, what are some of the changes? President Zelensky announced the death toll for the first time in 2 years, and that death toll is 31,000. These people are eternal heroes. However, I think it's important to look at it in the scope that we have a 1 million strong person Ukrainian defense force, and we have 31,000 deaths. We do have some missing in action that we're still trying to go ahead and understand. Have they been killed? Are they prisoners of war? And of course, there are some terribly and horrifically injured soldiers who have sacrificed so much on the front, but the actual death toll is less than 3% of the entire armed forces of Ukraine. And when viewed through that versus the nearly 200,000 dead Russians and another 300,000 injured Russians, we have to understand that Ukraine, under President Zelensky's leadership, is putting human life first.
Yeah, putting human life first, and also just being far more, this sounds really callous because we're talking about human lives, but the efficiency of the military, the ability to not just throw bodies at an operation, but actually put skill and planning into it so you don't have to have as many dead and wounded as Putin is willing to have. It says something both about the compassion and empathy and concern for its citizens that Ukraine has, but also that it is just a superior military operation to what Russia has, you know, put together with bubblegum and Band-Aids and, you know, criminals. It's impressive.
Absolutely criminals. And speaking of something criminal, Lisa, if I interject here for a moment, there was some statements made, again, with this understanding of transparency over the last 2 weeks by the administration and by some of the high-ranking military, that one of the reasons our counteroffensive was not successful is because the Russians had our plans on their table before it launched. And so when you factor in the idea that there may very clearly have been some nefarious actions going on that benefited Russia in stopping our counteroffensive, it's truly amazing that the death toll is as low as it was, because even with them knowing that it was coming, they truly had a difficult time stopping us. And in fact, they had to only be able to stop us knowing what our plans were from the beginning.
And another piece of transparency that you touched on and we talk about regularly is that journalists are still allowed to be journalists in Ukraine. You can be critical of your government. And this week we saw Russia jail, convict yet another journalist for doing nothing other than being critical of the war in Ukraine that Russia is waging. That puts you in prison in Russia. So, you know, for the members of the MAGA GOP who, you know, think that Putin is the be-all, end-all of phenomenal leaders and want to see someone like Donald Trump, who wants to emulate Putin, they think he should be our president once again. You know, this is jailing journalists is not just bad for the journalists. It's bad for the society.
That's one of the craziest things. I'm going to use this term, crazy, that when you see folks hissing and booing journalists, I believe Marjorie Taylor Greene herself just told somebody this week to go blank themselves when a credentialed journalist asked her a question. I believe in citizen journalism. I don't believe somebody has to work for the New York Times. I don't believe somebody has to work for CNN to be a journalist. However, everyone is entitled to the protections of journalism. But what MAGA doesn't seem to want is to have any journalist around. They want propagandists around. And once you start to erode this idea of what journalism is, again, it could be a one-person outlet. It could be a small print paper in Topeka, Kansas. Or it could be, again, the Washington Post or New York Times. They don't want any of this to exist. They want an echo chamber. They want every vertical across social media, every vertical across a network media to go ahead and parrot their talking points and their lines. That is the Russian playbook. And that's one of the most dangerous aspects of the MAGA movement is the not just attacks on journalism, but the absolute dehumanization and attempt to disappear the idea of journalists and journalism.
Right. To put so much propaganda and disinformation out into the stream of information that nobody trusts anything anymore. So truth no longer matters because it is just a sea of bullshit.
Indeed, a sea of bullshit, and a sea of bullshit that people happily swim in. You throw out the best lines, but these lines that you throw out there are not just, you know, catchphrases. They're not just for a laugh. They personify what these people wish for. They want to be able to swim in piles of bullshit, going down a river, leading them to a really awful life, because what they don't understand is the folks at the top don't care about them. We also know this from Russia. You can be going to the best parties in Moscow. You can be going to the best museums in St. Petersburg. But if you're somebody in Siberia, if you're a Buryat, if you're somebody else from one of the Russian, although non-Russian ethnic groups inside of the country, you're forgotten. And these ideas of somebody who's in West Virginia, who's in Kentucky, who's in Arizona supporting a Carrie Lake, that they are somehow going to be remembered when Carrie Lake's in power is partial. It's an embarrassment to anybody who's able to look at something critically. However, they continue to engage in it. I'd like to point out briefly an anniversary. This week celebrates my second anniversary of arriving in Ukraine. I arrived in Ukraine March 5th, 2022. And speaking of journalism, as the audience knows, or if you're listening to us for the first time, I came to Ukraine as a journalist, and I was a credentialed journalist in the armed forces of Ukraine, an independent journalist credentialed by the armed forces of Ukraine from March until October of 2022, wrote 50 plus bylines here and did a lot of reporting. And what jumped out to me, and I believe this might even be in some of my interviews, I felt like I had more freedom reporting from a war zone than I did trying to cover protests and police actions in Las Vegas, where they would say you can't be on a public sidewalk or threaten to charge you with some idea of a faux trespassing crime or something like that. And in Ukraine, where people and journalists and volunteers can go to the front lines of the war, report, we know that there's videos on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, directly from the front lines, from journalists, from soldiers. And to know that just over the border in Russia, it would be unfathomable. When was it? Last week we were talking, and if the Resolute Square audience hasn't heard our back catalog of shows at the Zero Line with you and I, Lisa, they should go back and listen to it. Specifically, the North Korea segment we were talking about, where the Russians were so happy to be in North Korea because they could go ahead and assail Kim Jong-il, and then admitted to CNN that they couldn't talk about it like that in their own country with Putin. And they didn't even realize it. And yes, you and I are laughing about it again, but yeah.
That one is really stuck with me. And you were saying in Russia, no matter how high your status is, you can fall from grace or never be in grace if you're not ethnically Russian. And the same is true in the United States for members of MAGA, and they still don't get it. Like, when an oligarch falls from a high place who used to be in Putin's inner circle, that's not clumsiness. Right? This person did something who crossed a line that you don't cross. And I mean, that's an extreme version of being put on the outside of the inner circle. But Trump does it all the time. And one person after another who, you know, steps into that position of power and authority they foolishly believe they have within Trump's inner circle or within the extremist a portion of the Republican Party, they come to learn that all those things like shutting the press up and, you know, all the other perks that they believe and protections they believe will come their way if they are willing to spew the party line and the disinformation, it never protects them. And one person after another, we see fall from grace. Trump will turn on them on a dime because it's never about the people. No matter how high up they are, it's never about the people. It's always about the strong man. There is one person that matters in Trump world, and it is Trump.
It's unfathomable to me that folks who really had achieved what we would think of as a baseline of success. So I was talking about West Virginia, where people are struggling with poverty, where people are struggling with terrible medical ailments, right? So those folks are fighting to overcome it. And who champions them? J.D. Vance. Then we flip to the folks who really, by any baseline of success, the white collar guys, the white collar women, lawyers. We saw it with Trump's own law firm, right? Or he doesn't have a law firm, but his own lawyers recently, where he turned on them. How can people who actually achieve something in life end up needing to grovel to a man? And again, I'll be the first to admit, I'm not against every policy that President Trump has put out. And some of what he has said has come to fruition. That said, we don't live in a world of a strong man. And when I see these people groveling to him, in some ways it says less about the Trump brand or the former president himself than it does say about the weakness of the people who managed to gravitate towards him. So we know who Donald Trump is, right? We all know. Anyone listening to Resolute Square, anyone who reads any sort of semi-critical news articles, who watches any sort of semi-unbiased television, knows who President Trump is. The fact that these people still gravitate to him is one of the more astounding aspects of the MAGA movement. And if you look back, Lisa, I mean, you and Rick and Stuart have been at the forefront of studying this and trying to push back against it with some of the work of Lincoln Project. But since 2015, the amount of people who attempted to attack him, who he then smacked down and then walked back to him, Ted Cruz with Ted Cruz's wife as an example. We also saw how many times with Lindsey Graham. I mean, that's just shocking. And so on and so on and so on. How could these people consider to be the leading lights of conservatism, the leading lights of what we would know of American greatness, our senators, groveling to a man that is happy to have his ass kissed by a waiter at Mar-a-Lago as he is by Senator Cruz himself? It doesn't even matter who's doing the ass kissing as long as it's happening, just like in Russia.
The Supreme Court in the United States has done a pretty effective job of gutting the Voting Rights Act and making it pretty toothless at this point. But don't let that stop Alabama, who still managed to get on the wrong side of the Voting Rights Act with the U.S. Supreme Court. And they were forced to create a second Black majority voting district because they had limited it to one and created some really interesting looking congressional districts to try to make sure that Black voters were divided up enough that they would have no power to truly elect someone who they felt represented them. So because that additional congressional district was added, one had to be eliminated. And now you have had two GOP members of Congress fighting over one spot. And, only one came out on top. And of course, you know, it's going to be the MAGA.
It's going to be the MAGA. And I want to just something. Excuse me for this very clear plug yet again of Resolute Square. But one point we're trying to do you and I, Lisa, on the Zero Line, is for the world to understand and the listeners to understand. It's not just about the physical battle here in Ukraine. It's about the battle for democracy across the world. And Resolute Square, you and all of our contributors and our principals, Stuart and Rick, are at the forefront of the Zero Line to save democracy. And then we see what happened in Alabama, as you just told our listeners, because how this is happening in 2024. Sometimes I laugh at inappropriate moments, but not because of what the topic is, but how ridiculous that it's a ridiculous notion we have to have these conversations, but we are. So you had these two Republicans running in the same district that they were drawn into only at the behest of the Supreme Court telling Alabama, hey, your overt racism was even a little bit too overt for us. And what becomes one of the key points in the race for the GOP? Both of these guys genuflected to President Trump. Both of these guys were trying to name drop him. He endorsed both candidates in their previous races, didn't endorse in this race. However, one of them belonged to the House Freedom Caucus, an ally of Jim Jordan, an ally of Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar.
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Taylor Greene, absolutely. Thank you. Goes ahead and says, Ukraine is not only a problem, how can you be a Republican and have voted for Ukraine aid? And several national publications, including Politico, said that that was the key difference in the race. So now we're seeing the litmus test for Republicans, even within MAGA, be Ukraine aid. And why, although I'm broadcasting from Ukraine and it's the Zero Line with Sarah Ash and Cirilla from, in a sense, Ukraine, the reality is Ukraine is simply another word for wherever the next battlefield is that the United States is going to have to defend. It could be fighting over funding for Israel, fighting over funding for Taiwan, fighting over funding for our allies in the global south. We see what's happening in Ecuador. We see what's happening in Haiti right now, which is just a human rights tragedy. I've been to Haiti 20 times. 20 times I've been to Haiti between 2007, 2017. And what I'm watching unfold now is just a human rights. It's literally no government on an island, Hispaniola, in a country, Haiti, that is within sailing distance of the United States. So if they're willing to throw away the front lines of democracy in Ukraine, what is going to be the red line for what the United States will respond to? It's truly Republican on Republican crime taking place, being bludgeoned with their Ukraine votes. Stunning, not surprising. That is today's MAGA for you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a southern state with a large military veterans population that was benefiting from military manufacturing. It is helping generate jobs in the state. And there is a deep, proud history in Alabama where Republicans and people in general were still, until recently, very connected to and proud of what their veterans had done in World War II to defeat fascism. And that we have now gone so far that the Republican Party is so unrecognizable that not only do all the other crazy right-wing shit that they do, but to have convinced the voters, at least the people who show up for primaries, and this is why y'all need to vote in every election, because if you see most of the people who vote in primaries, you don't want them making the decisions for you. Show up, cast votes in every election. But that the party has now gone to a place where in World War II, they would have been supporting the other side.
Yes, we've seen a history of this. We've seen the Charles Lindberghs. We've seen the folks who would have been supporting the other side. Their voices were drowned out, thankfully, and really as a blessing in the language. And I'm, you know, I invoke God all the time, and so do the people of Alabama. But thank God, truly, that they did go ahead and understand that the Nazis were a threat, that the Axis powers were a threat. And now Alabama is represented by a man who really did more damage to the United States military than possibly even Vladimir Putin did himself. When you have Tommy Tuberville as your senator, as your senior senator from the great state of Alabama, it should be no surprise that in this interesting fighting taking place among the GOP, you have somebody from the House Freedom Caucus winning on anti-Ukraine aid. And now more than ever, it's important for people to realize that if your congressman is on the fence about Ukraine aid, if you believe in bipartisanship, if you think that there's any chance that you can take a moment to send an email to the House of Representatives, do so. There's still ways to get this vote to the floor that will allow Ukraine to get aid, that will allow this issue, most importantly, to be taken off the table. Because currently, the longer it extends, the more that the MAGA movement led by Speaker Johnson, and again, many of our listeners may already know this, but I want to point it out. They asked Speaker Johnson the other day, what did you and President Trump talk about? He said, we talked about strategy. I'm paraphrasing here. Strategy on how President Trump himself can make sure we keep the House. Speaker Johnson did what you suggested a few weeks ago he was going to do, Lisa. He went ahead and handed over de facto control of the House of Representatives to former President Trump. There's no getting around it. And in this particular case, not only is that an abdication of his constitutional duties with the separation of powers, but President Trump shouldn't be running the White House. He shouldn't be running anything. He shouldn't be running the Trump Organization, let alone running the House of Representatives. And yet that's what it's come to. And so we end up with people such as this winner in Alabama that is going to be defining the future, not just of Ukraine, but the United States itself, and most likely in a very negative and weakening way.
Yeah, and they're really ensuring the ultimate, complete and total self-immolation of the GOP, because every time they lose another person who could have been in some world considered a moderate Republican, they were at least on the right side of democracy versus fascism, which is a pretty low bar to clear. But every time they lose one of those people, and those people are retiring now, they don't want to have to, I imagine they don't want to have to spend another day in Congress, but they also don't want to have to face another election or being primaried. And that just the people who are going to come in and fill those seats, unless they're defeated by Democrats, and a lot of these seats have been so gerrymandered that there's not a chance in hell that anybody but a Republican is going to win in them, but they are making themselves go more and more to the extreme and either putting so much pressure on people who don't want to go along to so that they will go along or they leave.
What world do we live in? And I can tell you which world it is. I'm not going to leave the audience in suspense. We live in the world of March 7, 2024, is the world we're living in, that Mitch McConnell and Ken Buck, are their retirements are being lamented. The day that Ken Buck says, I can't stand this anymore, I can't lie for President Trump anymore, every day. And Mitch McConnell is being thought, Mitch McConnell's the guy who gave away the Supreme Court of the United States, literally gave it away to corporate interests. And I don't mean because of Citizens United. I mean because of the hold that he put on the last nomination under Barack Obama, President Barack Obama. These people are now being looked at, as you said, the red line between fascism and democracy. Mitch McConnell, Liz Cheney, and Ken Buck are looked at now as these bastions of normalcy among Republicans. They're not. And what does that mean? That means the people who are left shouldn't even have a party label because they shouldn't be in office.
Yeah. If someone had told me 8-9 years ago that I would be thinking it could possibly be a bad thing that Mitch McConnell is not going to continue to be the either majority or minority leader in the Senate, depending on what the numbers are, I would have told you you were out of your mind and there was nobody who could be worse in that seat than Mitch McConnell. Now there are like a dozen people who would be worse. It's astounding. So we're getting to the end here. So since we're talking about Congress, we have the State of the Union coming up on, tomorrow. It'll be when this airs. And last I heard, the president hadn't been formally invited to deliver the State of the Union, which is a requirement that the House Speaker actually has to invite him. I assume that must have happened. They seem to be still planning that it's going to be taking place. But, you know, of course, this is not without controversy, and it ties back to Ukraine.
It does. So a lot of people know the name Navalny. And Navalny was a political foe of Vlad Putin. He was a lawyer who had managed to muster a significant opposition base. And he was thrown into prison for his political views. However, in Ukraine, Navalny does not hold the same, is not held in the same esteem that most of the rest of the world look at Navalny in. A few weeks ago, Navalny died in a Siberian prison colony, died due to the torture given against him and inflicted upon him by Vlad Putin. And so at one point in 2014, and this is very important, it comes back to this, Navalny stated regarding Ukraine and Crimea, what is Crimea? Nothing more than a sausage sandwich that's not meant to be handed back and forth. He was all for Russia to keep Ukraine. Navalny was a Russian nationalist. So what happens? Navalny's wife elevates to now an activist. She had been by her husband's side. She stepping into his shoes. The controversy is not over her qualifications. The controversy is that she, too, is a Russian nationalist who does not believe in the territorial sovereignty and integrity of Ukraine. And she's refused to say anything about Ukraine, except for the fact that after 2 years of war, we in Ukraine have been unsuccessful in dislodging Putin, which, by the way, was never the plan. It's just to get back territorial integrity, the country's 1991 borders. Here's where the controversy comes in. The Biden administration decided to invite both Navalny's wife and the First Lady of Ukraine, President Zelensky's wife. When President Zelensky's wife received the invitation, she turned it down flat because she would not be seen or communicate with Ms. Navalny simply because of the fact that the Navalny family and many other Russian nationalists do not support Ukrainian territorial sovereignty and integrity. That then cascaded down. Navalny's wife also chose not to come. So not only do we have a missing letter, the two main guests that were supposed to be coming at the behest of President Biden and Mrs. Biden have both canceled as well. It's unbelievable to me that we could be fighting a global war, that the State of the Union, and I'm going to chastise this entire situation, the State of the Union should be focused on what we can do in the United States to guarantee freedom across the globe right now, and hopefully to guarantee President Biden's reelection or whoever is running for the Democratic nomination, you know, against whoever's running for the Republican nomination. And in doing so, it's turned into a sideshow that she said, finger pointing. It's further diminished what the State of the Union is. It's further diminished the idea of the Biden administration. And we need to get past turning everything into a political sideshow and get back to the understanding, as you say over and over to the Resolute Square audience here on the Zero Line, Lisa, that once we lose democracy, we don't get it back. So the focus from the media, the focus from the Biden administration, and truly the focus from both the Ukrainians and Russians should be on the Russians who are against Putin should be on what can we do for victory of democracy and freedom across the world, not over this back and forth finger pointing. It's time for the politicians to grow up, and it's time for the snide remarks to be put away and for us to all become serious adults again.
I would love for us to go back to a time when there were not people invited to the State of the Union by either party. who were there for no other reason than to have a political point made and have them stand and receive applause or, you know, silence, which is generally what the other, when the other party's on its best behavior, they're silent. Doesn't always happen at the State of the Union anymore. But you're exactly right. The overall gravitas of the importance of the president addressing the joint session of Congress with the Supreme Court, the Joint Chiefs, and the American people. It's obviously going to be political because it's a political entity and you are trying to put your agenda forward, but to politicize things that people need to be coming together over right now, like funding Ukraine, we have to stop it. We just have to stop it.
On that note, I'm going to just throw this out there to the audience. In the military, especially when it comes to talking about Ukraine and the funding of Ukraine, we talk about force multipliers. The Resolute Square audience can come together in these final weeks before the vote, hopefully that will take place in the House, and truly become a force multiplier for aid to come to Ukraine and for the United States to reestablish itself as the lone superpower in the world that understands freedom and understands what democracy is. I've never made a call to action before, but I'm going to make a call to action right now. All of those who are listening on this broadcast, whether you're watching on YouTube, you're listening on your favorite podcast channel, or you're watching directly on the resolutesquare.com website, go ahead, pause it right here, write your representative, write your senators, tell them that you believe that America is the world's lone superpower, and that we can prove it by going ahead and funding Ukraine and making sure Vlad Putin and his allies in North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and China and the others across the world can get the message once and for all that in the United States, freedom matters. And then unpause us and finish listening.
Well, we're going to wrap it right there because that was the perfect ending and call to action. It's so important. I hope people really take that to heart because our members of Congress behave the way they do because when they believe, they have to be accountable to someone. And when they don't hear from us, they don't feel that pressure, then they are going to go along with whatever the force is that dominates. And right now, for too many Republicans, that's Trump, and he does not want the funding to happen for Ukraine. So please do call your members of Congress and remind them that they are elected and they are responsible to us. And we are a constitutional republic, yes, but we are a democracy. And we have to stay that way. So, Sarah, thank you very much, as always, for being here. Be safe in this next week until we see you again. And thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you, Lisa. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to The Zero Line, a podcast brought to you by Resolute Square. Resolute Square's mission is to inform, lead, and connect. And The Zero Line is one of the tools that followers of Resolute Square can use to fight back against tyranny while championing democracy. Please like and subscribe to The Zero Line wherever you podcast and follow us on Twitter at Resolute Square or visit resolutesquare.com. Thanks once more for hanging out at The Zero Line.